Gosh, she's amazing. All right. Well, now that we've got all the formalities out of the way, I'd like to introduce our speaker for tonight. I don't have this written down. Tony from La Mesa. I knew that. Thank you.
My name's Tony Laterra. I am an alcoholic. And El Cajon, not La Mesa. So those La Mesa people are like a little high up, you know. So I'm full East County. So welcome the new people to Alcoholics Anonymous, announced or unannounced. If you don't hear anything I say, I hope you hear that AA works. It really does, right? And it's worked really well for me, and I'm grateful for that. Doing this, I get really uncomfortable. I don't like wearing suits. I'm a shorts and work boots and t-shirt type of guy, right? Blue collar. So, but I have immense respect and gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous. Only through the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I have the life that I have today, right? I would not be sober. I wouldn't have a chance, one bit. I have a sobriety date, and that's October 12, 2008. I have a sponsor. His name is Bill M. So not my original sponsor, but he's my current sponsor, and he knows he's my sponsor, and I'm accountable to him. And that's real important that, you know, I have some accountability, not only with him, but with some other men in the program, and women. My wife's in the program also. And I have a home group, and it's Santee Men's, and we meet at Wednesday night, 7:30, and all those things are super important to me. And if you don't have those things, I hope you find them, right? Especially someone that can take you through this process of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where do we start, you know? I was really like practicing this story in the shower earlier, right? And, you know, it was really good, right? I wish some of you guys were there to hear it. I'm sure Robert would have been really impressed. I loved alcohol from an early age, right? And I can go back to my first drunk, right? At 10 years old at a family wedding. And, I grew up, I always felt different apart from, right? Shy, introverted, quiet kid. Didn't really understand all you people, right, or anyone else, and just never felt like I fit in. Like I felt like I was planted in my family, but I was an outsider, right? And I didn't come from a bad background. I had a loving family. Parents are still married. They had their religious practice and raised us right, right? But I still didn't feel connected. And at that wedding at 10 years old, I found champagne, right? And I had some champagne, and I can't say I was an alcoholic at that point, but I'll tell you, I ran from table to table down in the glasses of champagne. And something happened to me that day that I still remember very clearly now is I felt free for the first time. I felt alive, like my spirit was awakened. And I didn't drink every day after that. I was 10 years old, right? But every opportunity I had, I looked for it, right? And I loved weddings and family functions because I could always get a drink. And back then, they liked to do these champagne fountains, and they would park them right next to the punch fountain, and I'd get a little 50-50 mix, and no one would ever know, right? And I would get some relief, right, and feel okay. It progressed from there, right? By the time I was 15, 16, things started taking off, and introducing other things like marijuana and drinking, right? Once I got a driver's license, I was able to do what I thought I wanted to do, right? Had the ice chest hidden in the back seat, behind the back seat, and always had some beer with me and knew where I could buy it or get it. I drank every chance I got at that point. It just continued to progress, right? I didn't have any consequences. I barely graduated high school just because I think they were pushing us out at that point, right? Like, if you do just enough, we'll graduate you and send you on your way. And by the time I was out of high school, I was a garbage pail, right? And anything you gave me that changed the way I thought or felt, give me it and give me more, right? And I went on a tear for the next few years, And up to that point, no one told me I was an alcoholic or I had a problem, but my mom's like, I'm worried about you. You know, your grandfather was an alcoholic, and I think, you know, you might have a problem. I'm like, leave me the F alone. I'm not an alcoholic, right? And I remember screaming off in my little Volkswagen Bug and going on my way, right? And when I look back at that point in my life, I would have qualified for alcoholism, right? I just didn't know what it meant to be an alcoholic, right? You know, for the next 3 years, havoc and you know, coming home either bruised and bloody or windows broken out of my car, or, you know, who wants to call their mom from jail, right, and have them come pick you up or bail you out, right? And I had little consequences, and I didn't. I'm not a guy that has a lot of that experience. And the people that took cakes, congratulations, man. I could have listened to Terry all night with that Texas accent, right? I wanted her to be the main speaker, right? Like, geez. And yeah, all of you, like, congratulations. It's amazing. But I got in a little trouble, and I was faced with some time, and my parents had a sailboat down in San Diego, I knew if I got away from the hometown, I would be okay, right? Because that was the problem, right? It was my hometown, right? My connections, the people that I was around. If I just got to a different place, you know, I would be good. And I moved. The problem is the problem came with me, right? I was the problem. So I met new people with different, or the same people with different faces, right? And continue to do the same thing. And at that point, I was, when I moved to San Diego, I was kind of after this, like, American dream of finding her and building a life for myself and getting a home and all of these things. And I was relatively successful in the business I was in that I still do. I was introduced to maintaining and repairing swimming pools at 16 years old, right? And it was a great job for an alcoholic, right? Because I can get away with a lot and I can do a lot and I became a workaholic for many years, right? If you kept me really busy for a lot of time, I might not drink as much, right? And I remember at that point in my life, maybe I haven't crossed the line quite yet, but every time I drank, I had the same thing. I'd go to a bar, I'm like, I'm just gonna go and have a couple drinks and loosen up. And the same thing would happen. They'd be kicking me out at 2 a.m., right? Or I'd be leaving at 1 or 1:30 to go pick up a bottle on the way home or a 12-pack or something so I can continue on what I was doing. And at that point, I thought, like, I came to San Diego living on a boat. I arrived, right? Like Bill's story, I arrived. But really, I was rowing to home, right, to the boat. I had no electricity, no running water, right? I was already, like, seeking isolation. I would have liked to call it solitude, but really it was isolating from everyone. And through that period, I worked a lot and I had some material success in my external life. And I took a girl for hostage and she was a sweet thing. But she was an alcoholic, right? And she didn't even like to drink. She would have a half a drink and put it down. And I hated it. Like, man, you're so boring, right? Like, there's no, like, drama. There's no nothing. And she had no fight in her. She never told me to stop. She accepted me, and I told her this is who and what I am, right? I'm a drink weed or drink and smoke pot the rest of my life, man. You know, and that's it. And she accepted that, right? Just to be with me and maybe have a family and a future one day. As that got more uncomfortable, I like to introduce other things into my drinking, right? Part of my story is I did a lot of cocaine at that in my late 30s, right, and early 30s, and I introduced it back in my life from being the garbage pail from 18 to 21. I put the hard drugs down, and I would just drink and smoke weed and maybe do occasional hallucinogenic or Valium or stuff like that, right? But it wasn't like full blown. And I got rid of her, and this way I could drink and do what I wanted to do with no one looking at me saying, and she didn't even say it, but like just the look on her face, right, of disgust. And And I met some girls that like to party, but you girls are crazy. And that never worked out well, right? Or for very long, right? Just the reality of it. It continued to progress. And for me, it progressed to the point where, I was doing so much cocaine with my drinking, staying up for two or three nights in a row. And I like to do projects when I'm moving like that. So, like, sometimes I would clean the carpet at 3 a.m, right, by hand, right, on hands and knees, right? I like to clean the refrigerator because it always looked dirty. So, when I cleaned it, it was, like, in it, on top of it, under it, behind it, right? I had some of these vertical blinds, and I'd wedge one up on the couch, and I'd crawl up and I'd sneak up to peek out to see who was looking in, right? That's what I became, and it got to the point where, I was waking up with blood on the pillow, right? Blood was in the toilet, right? Wondering if I was going to wake up the next morning because my heart's beating so fast it's going to pop out of my chest one more time, right? I did what some of you guys have done. It's called the alcoholic prayer, right? I had this little cross in a bottle that was from my grandma who passed away a couple years prior, and I got on my knees. I'm like, God, help me, right? And something miraculous happened right away, but it didn't. But things started happening, right? Like for the first time in my life, I tried to control the problem, right? And as I tried to control it, it got worse. Right. My first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous was in the middle of a binge at 3 a.m. trying to figure out where I belonged. Right. Do I need to go to AA, CA, a recovery home? Right. You name it. And I had a big hang up. Right. And the hang up is saying, I need help. Right. Or I don't know. I didn't have enough humility to say those things. And I didn't want anyone to find out. Right, even though they already knew, right? And shortly after that, I had an intervention pulled on me by the California Highway Patrol. And I think the only thing that upset me that night was the police officer drove my car, right? How dare him drive my car, right? And they're just trying to rush me to get home. Or to downtown so they can pull my blood because I wouldn't blow in their machine, right? Like, no, I'm not blowing in that. We're good, right? It landed me with one of these things I see on the table here, which I like to call gift certificates to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And if you don't know what a gift certificate is, it's a court slip. And if you're here on a court slip, it might be by mistake. I'm not sure. Hopefully someone takes you through that book or you read the doctor's opinion to discern whether or not you're a real alcoholic or not, right? Like really understand the illness. And I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had one day of sobriety. The day before, I was searching for another ball, right? Keep another thing going. And I went to a meeting, and I saw a group of people standing out in the parking lot, and I was terrified, right? I had to walk through these people. I had to come in that room. And I knew what an alcoholic was at that point. I saw you guys on TV, right? Yeah. Brown paper bag, trench coat, living under the bridge. And that's some people's experience, right? And it wasn't mine, right? I spent a lot of time trying to fix my external circumstances, like achieve certain things on the outside, so you wouldn't know how I really felt on the inside, right? And I was living a facade for a long time, right? And it was just a fact. But the reality of it, I was spiritually bankrupt. I was dying, and I was completely hopeless, and I didn't understand the problem. And so I went to that first meeting, and I saw a group like this, a bunch of people who normally would not mix, different ages, backgrounds, religions, Democrat, you name it, right? And something happened where I like to say I had a moment of clarity, and for the first time in my life, I asked myself, when's the last time you've been sober, and for how long? And for the 18, 19 years prior to that point, I couldn't come up with more in a day or two of being sober. And it was usually because I was like deadly sick, right? Getting over some flu or you know, hitting it too hard or whatever. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll just take it all away, right? And I left that meeting, and they gave me this little name sticker tag, and I stuck it on the dash of my truck. And I'm like, I'm going to get sober, and this is going to be great. With no understanding of alcoholism and what was in front of me at that point, right? And what I've come to learn is the elimination of alcohol is just the beginning, right? It's just the start, right? And I got a little more uncomfortable as the days went on, or the day went on, and, you know, irritable, restless, discontented, right? I had moments of elation, this is going to be great, and moments of, like, this is horrible. How am I going to do this, right? And the third meeting I went to that week was a Friday night. It was a men's stag, and someone sent me to, and I got there right at 8 o'clock, and there's still a few people outside, still terrified and scared, and went down to this basement, and I looked around, and I could see why some of you guys needed to be here, right? Yeah, you know, and they asked who was new, and me and one other guy raised their hand, right? And I'm like, oh shit, right? Like, you know, and I listened, and I heard the same thing, right? You need to get a sponsor. You need to take the books, take the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And you need to be active in Alcoholics Anonymous, be a service, and go to meetings and have a spiritual experience and a relationship with God if you want to stay sober. And I heard the God thing I kind of tried to, like, push that aside, right? Because I was brought up in that Catholic background, and I wanted nothing to do with the God I was raised in. And I'm so grateful that I heard things that this is a spiritual program, not a religious one. And I'm grateful for the literature, you know, especially, like, early on when I was reading Bill's story with my sponsor and Ebby telling him, go find your own conception of God, right? And that's been so valuable from my experience of getting here, because I wanted to push that away, right? I thought God was just the one thing that was forced upon me as a kid, and I don't want anything to do with that. I didn't want anything to do that with that when I got here, and it's not the relation that I have today, or who am I to say there's no God, right? What makes me so special, right? So I can wrap my head around that, and I struggled with the unmanageability of the first step, because I thought it meant more about my external circumstances, right? I thought the unmanageability meant, oh, you're on the streets, or you don't have, you know, you're creating havoc or running through people's lives. So it just made me an asshole, right? The unmanageability it really meant was my internal condition, right? The spiritual malady, as it's called, the spiritual sickness, illness. And it's best described for me in the Bedevilments, and we agnostics, and it talks about being a prey of misery and depression, feeling useless, inability to maintain relationships. There's a few others, but I'm gonna chop it up with that. And I identified that, but, you know, the only thing that I could do was, like, make a little money to maintain the gig I had going on. So once I started to understand that the manageability meant nothing about my external stuff, it was more my internal stuff, and the only way I was going to get through that, what was kept being impressed on me was taking these steps, right? And I fought it at first, right? And like most of us do, I'm defiant by nature. Someone tells me I do something, even if it's a suggestion, it sounds like authority. Like, you need to do this, and my sponsor would make suggestions, and I would just, you know, I remember I was 2 weeks sober, and he's like, man, you sound resentful. And I'm like, I get off the phone, I spent an hour yelling at him in my head about how dare him call me resentful, right? And I was terrified. I was angry. I wanted to punch anything that was in front of me at that point. And he kept telling me, well, we got to take the steps, right? For me, my surrender, I believe, I could see I was powerless pretty early on based on my experience. But to be truly surrendered, I had to get in a lot of pain and uncomfortability and sobriety, right? And I was a month sober, balled up in my, well, let's backtrack. I went to a Sunday morning meeting, and this old dude came up to me, asked me if I was doing okay, and I'm like, yeah, I'm doing fine. And he's like, "You lying to me?" And he turned around and walked away. I'm like, "Man, what a jerk, right?" Like, he doesn't get it, right? And the next night I went to a meeting, I got home, and I turned this show on that I don't suggest you turn it on if you're in your first, I don't know, maybe year or two. I don't know, it's called Intervention. Maybe some of you have heard of it. Yeah. Yeah, 30 Days of Sobriety. I got something back I didn't want, right? A conscience, right? And I really started seeing the fact of all the destruction that lied before me, right? All the time I sold for my parents, or all the things that they went through watching me do what I did, right? And all the other people that I was a tornado who ran through other people's lives, right? And it hurt, right? And I balled up in my bed and cried for hours contemplating suicide, right? Because I didn't want to feel that, right? And I didn't want to drink at that point, but I didn't want to feel any of it. And that next day, or shortly after that, I believe that's where I really surrendered to this process and started taking most of my sponsor's suggestions, right? Because I'm still a little defiant. I still have some fight in me, right? But I started doing the work and doing what he was asking me to do. And I'd like to say everything got better right away. That wasn't my experience. It was a trudge. I'm glad I had some trudgers tonight to come with me. Thank you guys for coming out tonight. But it was tough, man. And early sobriety was rough, man. I had a lot of sleepless nights, nightmares, right? Would sleep for 2 hours, wake up and stare at the ceiling and ran around in my head for hours, right? And just uncomfortable. And we kept doing the work and kept taking the steps, right? And we got to step two, and thank goodness, you know, step two was find my own conception, right? He had me write out my own conception of God. It's something I can work with, and we moved on. That first year was really tough, and I always identified to Bill's story when he talked about the first year and half of sobriety. There's moments of self-pity and depression that almost drove him back to drinking, and nothing saved the day as well as working with other alcoholics. And at about 4 months of sobriety, I'm somewhere around the 10th, 11th step, and I was going to like 10 meetings a week, and I'm like, I don't feel that good. You know, this is still difficult. Like, I think I need to cut back on the AA stuff and start living life more, you know, like maybe I can do some other things. And this kid came up to me and asked me to sponsor him. I went and asked my sponsor. He said, "Oh yeah, you're far enough along the road. You need to go help someone." Right. And I started sponsoring this guy, and 90 days later, he's like, "Yeah, I'm done with you. I'm moving on." Right. And my feelings were hurt, and like, how dare him? But the reality is he saved my life. He kept me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was picking him up, dragging him to meetings. I was dragging other guys to meetings. And when I got sober, I had some external, so I had this big car and we'd just load it up, right? And take people to meetings. And it kept me in the middle of AA, right? And he got rid of me. And a week later, I was sponsoring two other guys, right? I'd pick up one from his sober living. I'd take him to Lake Murray. We'd read for an hour. I'd drop him off. I'd pick up someone else. We'd go back to Lake Murray, read for another hour, like, and it filled up my Saturday morning every week, right? And I needed every bit of that. Like, I was sick. And I don't know if I would have stayed without that self-sacrifice and work, right, that we try to do around here. Things slowly got better, right? Early sobriety, I like to say, is not all ice cream and orgasms, you know? There's plenty of ice cream, right? But it's tough at moments. Yeah, Lori, sorry. part of my story. it was tough, right? But I stayed in the middle of AA, right? So like my first couple years of sobriety, I was doing 7 to 10 meetings a week, sponsoring guys, you know, doing the steps, you know, and then one day I walked into a meeting and, you know, boy meet girl, AA campus, and two broken parts find each other and make a whole one, and life's going to be grand and good, and this is perfect, and she's perfect, and And really up to that point, I thought like life was good. And I'm like, where'd all this stuff come from? Right. And a whole new level of growth and work had to happen. Right. And in that relationship, I learned a lot more about myself and how much more work I had to go. And it was difficult. Right. There was moments of pain that was equivalent of me being a month sober, balled up, crying in my bed, contemplating suicide. Right. And trying to navigate a relationship I didn't understand. And I was really grateful that some other men shared with me their experience. And then also it talks about in the family afterwards is we look at where doctors and psychologists can be helpful, right? And I went and got someone to work on that aspect of my life, right? And I got a therapist and I included that. And that's the second best thing that I've ever done in my life after sobriety in AA, right? Because there are some deep-rooted mommy issues that I had and some relationship stuff with women. And I think the steps would have kept me sober, but like, I don't know for how long, right? Like I needed sufficient change. And some of that change is like in step 6 and 7. And I needed professional help to get through that. And that relationship, my wife likes to call them gifts and ugly wrapping paper. You know, and it was a gift, right? It was truly a gift because it allowed me to work on things that I didn't know I even needed to work on. And parted ways there. And it seems like shortly after that, I met my wife, you know, less than a year after that relationship, right? And I've been with her for the last over 9 years, right? By far the longest relationship in my life and healthy, based around God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because she's one of us and she practices AA well. Really, she's a good example. But backtrack, you know, like some of the amends processes, right? Like I like to bring my financial amends into it. You know, at 90 days sober, I got audited and being a stellar business owner before I got sober, you know, I was terrified. Right, of this audit, right? Because I know I lied, and I know I sold, and I know I cheated, and it took me like another 9 months before I even took action on it, and I would be running around doing a bunch of meetings, dragging guys to meetings, and staying busy in AA, but I'd go home at night, and I'd get this knot in my stomach, IRS, you know, it'd keep me awake, yeah, I wasn't free of it. And I met a man in a meeting, and he led me to a tax guy, and step by step, we started working this process. And what happened was I got right-sized, right? And I had to feel some humility. And he suggested I write them a letter. So I wrote them this phenomenal letter, right? I thought for sure they would give me some forgiveness, right? No, they would still want their money, right? And what seemed like a manageable amount at first turned into being a huge amount of money for me. And I didn't see a way out, right? And my best thinking was I'll sell everything I have and I'm gonna run to Mexico because I'm sure I'll stay sober down there. not saying there's some good recovery down there, but that wouldn't have been on my spectrum, right? That would have been what I would be doing it. And I started walking through step by step, and to me that was like another huge gift in ugly wrapping paper, right? Because it allowed me to see that those things that I thought made me didn't make me who I was, right? So I like parted with, you know, toys, right? Like I like shiny, loud, fast, noisy stuff, the boy stuff, right? And I parted with that stuff, and as I parted with it, I got more free, right? And I got more humility, which brought more God into my life. And in that time, like I would go home, I had to shut the cable TV off and the internet and all these things, and take a calculator to the grocery store, learn how to budget and live within my means. And in that extra time, it allowed me to seek more God, right? It allowed me to build on my meditation practice and allowed me to read the literature more and other, you know, other spiritual books, right? And and it was a fabulous gift, right? Because after going through that, it took me a little over 8 years. I was a little over 8 years sober before I was completely done giving them their money back, right? And on the other side of it, what happened is I knew how to budget. I knew how to live in my means. I knew how to stay right-sized, right? And I still like loud, fast, shiny stuff, right? But I don't put myself in trouble, right? Like, I have a financial discipline. I have things like a retirement plan, which I never had, you know, before I got sober, right? Or just couldn't even think of, right? And that didn't even start until after I was done with IRS, right? I had to give back what was theirs and continued on, right? What else can we go? Where else can I go here? I'm going to talk a little about the steps, right? We talked about the first step a little bit, right? It was impressed on me to understand what that is when I start drinking, I can't control the amount I drink, right? And when I stop, I can't stay stopped. And I had countless nights or mornings where I said, I'm never going to drink again. I'm done. And something would happen between then and noon where I'd be drinking again, right? And time and time again. And if you would have hooked up a lie detector test to me that morning, I was telling the truth. I did not want to drink today. And I could not stop, right? And I can clearly see that. And the brief moments that I tried to, I couldn't do it for very long. And the book talks about the only way to get through that is through a spiritual experience, which means that I needed to take the steps and getting a conception of God was easy. And then in that third step, you know, really the direction was simple for me, memorize the prayer. But really what it means for me today more so today than ever is I'm going to turn my thoughts and my actions to practice this program to the best of my ability, right? Day in and day out. And I don't do it perfectly. The only thing I've done perfectly is not drink, right? I've messed up a lot of stuff along the way, right? I still have to make amends, which I don't want to, but I still need to be free of that, right? So I continued to practice that, right? I did an inventory with my sponsor, and I'd like to say my first fifth step, I was wholeheartedly honest, right? And sometimes I share this. I shared it the other night, but I admitted on my first fifth step something that I was going to take to my grave, right? And God has a funny way of doing things. Like, he works in my life on a regular basis. And I was like 5 years sober, and that thing was lingering with me. I wasn't free of it, right? And I was taking another man through the steps, and we're doing his fifth step, and guess what he shares? My secret, right? Now here's my opportunity to get honest with another man and be completely free of that. And I didn't tell him that he was the first one that knew it until like 5 years later. But, you know, he knows that today, right? And that's super valuable. I believe that God put him in my life, right, to be free of that. And I don't know if I would have stayed sober or not. I can't say. But what I can say is I am free from it by doing so. Six and seven, I heard a speaker share about it recently that really kind of rings true for me. Six and seven is all about where I'm at right now today, right? Where I'm at with my inventory, what's going on with me, what are my fears, what defects am I working through at this present moment of time, right? And the problems I dealt with early on in sobriety, it looks different today. I still am selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, dishonest at times, right? The bar's pretty high or low for me. Like the best thing I can say is I'm trying to be a little bit better than I was yesterday or last week or last month, right? A better version of what God would have me be, go out and I made the amends and the hardest part for the ninth step with me is maintaining those relationships that I caused all the damage with, right? I'd rather stay busy in AA, right? I'd rather be hanging out with you guys than maintaining the relationship with my parents at times, and I love them to death, but a couple days with them, I'm like, oh man, I gotta go, right? Sometimes I feel that way, unfortunately, you know. I love my mom to death, but I still see the same thing as I saw when I was a child, right? But I have a good relationship with them. I talked to them this morning. I talked to them on a regular basis, and that's only because of God and AA. I continue with the looking at myself, continuing to grow. Take prayer and meditation into my life, and I have a daily practice. The 11th step for me is, I was told early on, it's not the bonus step, it's not extra credit, right? And it's not prayer and meditation sometimes, and I have a daily practice. I get up at the same time every day. I have the same chair I sit in. I have the same books around me, and I go to my office, and that's where I start my day. Occasionally, well, if my wife will have a house guest and it throws me off, or if we're on a trip, I haven't been 100% perfect with it, with anything, but it is a super important practice for me, right, to give God some time, right? God took the worst problem I ever had away, right? I was dying of alcohol and drugs, right? I was bleeding, right? I didn't know if I was going to wake up the next morning, and I have this whole full life that's super abundant, right? I take, you know, relationships I have people with people that I don't see on a regular basis, but when I see them, I light up, right? You know, I'm like grateful to see them, you know, and the 12th step, it's gained me some emotional peace and emotional sobriety, right? By doing this work for a long time. But not only that, like, I have a primary purpose today, right? And my primary purpose is to carry this message and try to help the next other alcoholic, right? I had a spiritual experience as the result of these taking these steps. And for me to walk away from here and not try to give it back would be extremely selfish, right? You know, it'd be all about me and what I can get. And the more I give myself to others, the better my life is still today. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I never thought I would say that when I got here. If you told me that, I'd be standing in a suit in front of you guys sharing my story, I'd say you're crazy, right? Or I'd be up at 5 praying and meditating, and then right after that taking phone calls from other men, right? I've been blessed with being able to work with a lot of guys over the years and a lot of guys in my life today. Some of them I've been able to take through the steps. Some of them are just, you know, we're in the trenches together doing AA, right? We're giving this back and trying to just to save some lives, right? Give some hope, right? There is a way out. We'll never have to drink again. Today my life is very different. I wake up at 5. I have my morning routine, and I get some phone calls. I put my work boots on, and I hit the door at 6, and I talk to alcoholics usually from like 5:45 to 9 on and off all morning, and then sprinkled through my day. I go to 4 to 5 meetings a week in a regular schedule. When I got here, when they gave me the gift certificate, they told me I needed to go to 3 meetings in 3 months. And I was like, man, that's absurd. It sounded very absurd, right? I don't know if 3 meetings is enough for me today in a week, right? Like I need to be in the middle of it, and I am in the middle of it, and I have men that keep me accountable, and men I can be honest with. We went up to Carlsbad the other night with three guys were in my truck, and we're driving back, and I'm telling on myself, right? And it's not what I did, it's my thinking, right? And the problem centers in the mind, and my thinking is a little off from time to time, and if I don't share that with someone else, it might gain legs, right? And those legs can take me to a place that might get me drunk again, right? So, like, I need to be honest to other men. And sometimes it's my sponsor. Sometimes it's just a guy that's sitting with me, and he's been vulnerable and honest with me, right? And I can be vulnerable and honest with them and sharing what's going on in my life today. My challenges are different now. Like I said, I got married, and I have 2 stepdaughters, and going from living by yourself for a decade to moving in with 3 women, there's a lot of opportunity to grow. but I have a new level of love and understanding and patience, right, and empathy. And then also I can see where I'm still the problem, right? Where my self-seeking will get in the way and harm those relationships. And I shared about the other day, or maybe last night or something, but I had a stepdaughter where I wanted certain things to happen with, and like we played this little triangle dynamic with my wife and her, and I would, and you know, it got to a point where I was seeing like they weren't going along with my show, right? And the more I imposed my will, the worse it got, right? And I could see where my self-seeking was not only harming my relationship with my wife, but her relationship with her daughter, right? And I had to make amends for that, right? And to amend something means that I'm going to change something, right? And in that process of making amends and changing and not micromanaging things, I watched this thing change where my relationship got better with her, and her relationship got better with her daughter. My relationship with her daughter got better. Like, everything worked better, right? So, like, I'm still the problem, right? I definitely will create the confusion and all of that. So, I don't know. I have immense respect for the people who came before me. There's a lot of people with a lot of time in this room. And I know some of you and some I don't. Thank you for laying the pavement for us and me, and show me how to do AA. I don't think I have a chance. You know, the book talks about jails, institution, or death. And the thing is, I don't get to pick, right? My luck, it would be like this long, dreadful existence until I died, right? You know, or took myself out. I don't know, man, life's good. I think I'm gonna end there. I appreciate your guys' time. This is my favorite part. I'm all done. Yeah. Thank you guys.